All right, this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. This week is a double anniversary. 1 year ago, George Floyd had his life brutally choked out of him before the eyes of the world. His murder at the hands of the police enforcers of this system was the spark for millions of people to take to the streets in large cities and small, and in many countries around the world. It is also the 100-year anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre, when mobs of racist whites murdered hundreds of black people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and destroyed the black business and residential district. At the back end of the show, we'll hear a short documentary from the American Crime Series at RevCom.us on the Tulsa Massacre, and we'll listen to the beginning of a talk by Carl Dix at Revolution Books in New York City on the Tulsa Massacre. Before that, you'll hear Sansara Taylor, a co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube, talking about the murder of George Floyd and the historic significance of the beautiful uprising last spring and summer. You don't want to miss this. And before that, we'll hear a piece from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, on the oppression of black people and other people of color, which serves as an introduction to that whole part of the show. And opening the show up, we'll hear a press conference given last week by the RevComs, announcing plans for a march on June 12th. The press conference was in front of the L.A. County Sheriff's Station in South Central L.A.
We are here today on the anniversary of when George Floyd's life was snuffed from him. And we all saw that video where he said, "I can't breathe." We are here today in front of the Sheriff's Station to talk about the lessons from 1 year since we've seen that video that went everywhere and that inspired millions to rise up and say no more. So we're gonna start today with Joe Veal. We're gonna start today with Joe Veal, who is a former Black Panther Party member and now is a follower of Bob Avakian.
All right, 1 year, the anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. We all saw it. We all saw it playing out for 9 minutes, for nine plus minutes. The torture, the brutality. And it's like, as the leader of the revolution says, BA says, this system has never respected, in the 400 years of existence of this system, has never respected the humanity of black people. 401 plus years has always treated black people as something to be exploited, oppressed, or repressed. And we saw it playing out the cold-blooded way that they murdered George Floyd. But we also saw something else. We saw people rise up in the thousands, rushing into the streets day after day, night after night. No matter what they threw at us, all genders and different like races, again and again, those thousands grew into tens of thousands across this country, and it grew into even millions more around the world. But, you know, we have to get, and we're about getting to the root of this problem. How long will this continue to go on? To the root of it, we need leadership. And what kind of leadership do we need? We need leader. We can't have leadership that say, "Well, I've been oppressed because of my race or because of my gender or whatever, so I should like lead." No, we need leadership that is scientific, that can shine a light on the real nature of this system, how white supremacy and capitalism, how it goes hand in hand. We can't get rid of one without abolishing the other. And we have that leadership. We have that leadership in Bob Avakian, BA, the leader of the revolution, with a strategy and a program to take on this imperialist beast, to overthrow it and to replace it with a whole new and different system, the new socialist republic of North America. This is the leadership that we need. And we saw the potential out there in the street, the potential for revolution. When we saw the thousands and the tens of thousands who came to the street That shows the potential of a force that can be marshaled and wielded into a revolutionary force. And that's not the only division that where people could be mobilized into a revolutionary force come from. Because there's thousands and tens of thousands and millions who are upset and who've been in protest and anger about what this system is doing to the environment, the degradation and discrimination that it brings down on women and LGBT people, the persecution along the border of immigrants and they wars the empire. The people that oppose this, this is all shows the potential that could be wielded into a revolutionary force. And we are about taking this leadership to those people and to organizing them into a real revolutionary force. Bob Avakian has got a strategy, has developed a strategy and developed a further scientific method to make revolution, to emancipate all humanity. That method and approach is the new communism that BA has developed. And I'm a follower of BA. We all are followers of BA. And everybody that's listening to this, you need to become followers of BA too. Because there's never has in the history of this country been a leader like Bob Avakian. And he's the only leader like this in the world today. So, here we are, people. And this is where we need to go. We need to go to take this to revolution, nothing less, to bring down this system, to overthrow it, and like I said, replace it with a whole new system. And we got the leadership for that. And I'm challenging everybody that's listening to this to get with that leadership and to get with BA and become a followers of him so we can do what needs to be like done, and that's getting rid of this system once and for all.
All right, and next we're going to hear a call to all who want a better world. Noche Diaz, a spokesperson for the Revolution Clubs, is going to talk about what this call is.
June 12th. Show the world we are getting organized now for revolution, nothing less. June 12th. We gather on Western and Imperial and get at 2 p.m. and get ready to march through this neighborhood and end up right here in front of this pigsty. June 12th, if you were sick watching that video of George Floyd having the life snuffed out of him, if you were sick watching the trial of the pig who killed George Floyd as other pigs around the country continue to murder and murder and murder, even as the verdict was announced, then you need to be there on June 12th. If you're sick and tired of the terror and brutality enforced by this system, you need to be there on June 12th and march with the RevComs. If you're sick and tired of being treated like dirt and telling yourself or being told that all you can do is put your head down and eat that dirt, you need to come on June 12th and march with the RevComs and be part of lifting up your head and saying we're getting organized for revolution, nothing less. If you're sick of how all this goes on, no matter who is in power, no matter what reforms get passed, no matter what funds get deallocated or reallocated, then you need to be there on June 12th to march with the RevComs and declare we are getting organized for revolution, nothing less. If you're sick of the leaders that get paraded out in front of people who want a better world, that tell you to find some way to tinker around the edges, to make America live up to its promises, then you need to know about and follow the leadership of Bob Avakian, who says America was never great, and it's because of the system that's at its foundation, and we need revolution, nothing less, and we can do it. And you need to be there on June 12th, marching with the Rev Coms, who have this leadership and are going to work to make this revolution. If you saw over the last year all those millions who took to the streets and said we're sick and tired and we need an end to white supremacy, and you're tired of how that potential, that beauty, constantly gets wasted and squandered and becomes new reasons for people to swallow and accept all this oppression or pass it on to future generations that have no future under this system, then you need to be there on June 12th. Because there is a way to a future that is worth living and dying for. There is a way that the world can be free of all this madness, all this terror and brutality. And that way is getting organized now for revolution. On June 12th, when we gather on Western and Imperial, it's not just another march and rally to say what we're angry about and against. It's to show everybody that we are for revolution against the whole system. On June 12th, when we march to this pig station, it is not just to call out all of the crimes that have been carried out by this station, like the murder of Dijon Kizzy, or the repression against those who righteously protested afterwards, and the constant terror they enforce in this neighborhood and around LA. It is not just to call that out, but to say that, like looking at the mold on the walls, if you think that stinks, if you think that's ugly, you should see what's at the core on the inside. You should see the rot. You should see the devastation at the center of it all. And there's no solution but tearing down those walls and digging out all the rot and building a new foundation. And that is what a revolution is, sisters and brothers. That is what Bob Avakian is calling for and is leading us to organize for now. And again, June 12th, you need to be at Western and Imperial at 2 p.m. to march with the Rev Coms, to be part of a disciplined and organized force that will be marching not just as protest as usual, but to train people how to work together, how to look out for each other, how we stand up against this system that's fighting to build up the strength to put an end to this system and end all this madness and to replace this country with a new socialist republic in North America, where, as Bob Avakian has said, our police would be trained to die themselves before they take one of the lives of the people. Because that's what it means to protect and serve. And the fact is that this tells you a lot about what kind of society and what kind of system this is. The murder and terror that these sheriffs, that these police and ones like them all over this country, what they enforce is a murderous system, an inhuman system that has no future for humanity, for our youth. But the revolution has a future worth fighting for. And you need to step into it, June 12th. You need to show the world that there, right here in the belly of the beast, there is a force that is not going along with it, not trying to get in on this system and its oppression, not trying to curb some of its excesses, not trying to make America live up to its promise, but realize the promise that exists if humanity rises up as makers of revolution and emancipators of humanity. So June 12th, we call on you, everywhere and anywhere you are, come down and be part of bringing others down to South Central on Western and Imperial at 2 p.m. to declare we're getting organized for revolution, nothing less. If you're in this neighborhood, you've been seeing the revolution. Now is your time to step into it and join the revolution. If you're from other parts of the city, these are not just some people somewhere else who this is happening to. This is our people, for everybody who wants to see an end to injustice, and you need to be here in South Central, June 12th, 2 p.m., starting at Western and Imperial. And if you're in other parts of the country, there are revolution clubs doing this on this day, at other sites of enforcers of this system in other parts of this country, or you can call one for yourself to declare as part of a national movement, we are getting organized now for revolution, nothing less. 1 year since the murder of George Floyd. 1 year since the beautiful uprising that followed. How many more years will this go on? No more. Revolution, nothing less.
That's right. So one more time, June 12th at 2 p.m. Western and Imperial. And we're going to march and we're going to end up right here in front of this sheriff station. And we're going to declare and show the world that we are getting organized now for revolution, nothing less. And we have the leadership in Bob Avakian, who has brought forward a strategy and has written a constitution for how we would organize society after we overthrow these monstrous murder systems. And get to a world where no more mothers would have to bury their children because a thug in a badge took their life away. Because of the way this system functions. So we are calling on all of you. If you're tired of living in a world where people are treated as less than human, come to June 12th. Represent with others. Show the world no more. Revolution, nothing less. Thank you.
That was Michelle Chai, Joe Veal, and Noche Diaz talking about a march that is going to occur on June 12th in Los Angeles. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. Now let's hear Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, on the oppression of black people and other people of color, from the speech, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution.
The oppression of black people and other people of color. This system in this country was founded in genocide and slavery. From the beginning, African Americans and Native Americans were treated as pariahs, a caste of people less than human and not deserving of the same rights and opportunities as the European settlers of the territory. White supremacy was poured into the foundation and into every institution of the country. The uniting of the United States was accomplished through the compromise written into the founding Constitution that institutionalized slavery. And for generations, slave labor produced a great part of the wealth of this country. As I said in Basics 1-1, there would be no United States as we now know it today without slavery. That is a simple and basic truth. And then, when it was no longer possible to contain the conflicts that had been somewhat held in check by the founding compromise, the Civil War erupted between the southern slave states and the northern states, which increasingly were based on the exploitation of wage labor by capitalists. But shortly after the end of this Civil War, another compromise was engineered, which was a continuation of the original compromise under the new conditions. The country was put back together on the basis of reaffirming and reinforcing white supremacy. With the masses of black people still overwhelmingly in the South, subjugated and terrorized into second-class citizen status, exploited in conditions of near slavery, and sometimes still literal slavery by white plantation and other property owners. And the land and way of life of the native peoples was further stolen through armed conquest and decimated by slaughter, confinement in reservations, and cultural genocide, which has resulted in the poverty, oppression, and repression that continues to be inflicted on Native Americans to this day. Under slavery, it was the armed patrols and militias organized by the slave owners that hunted down slaves who rebelled or just tried to escape and terrorized the masses of black people as a whole. After slavery, with Jim Crow segregation, it was the Ku Klux Klan, together with local sheriffs, who largely played this role. Today, in the conditions in which masses of black people in the ghettos of the inner cities find themselves, the role that was played in the past by the slave patrols and then the Ku Klux Klan and local sheriffs is now carried out by heavily armed urban police forces. This is a big part of the overall role of the police, which, as I said in Basics 124, is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, to enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all their brutality and murder, is the law and order that enforces all this oppression and madness. In the days of slavery and then Jim Crow segregation after the Civil War, the oppressors viciously exploited and terrorized black people, brutally murdering those they saw as posing a threat or not staying in their place. But they did not kill off or incarcerate a huge part of the black population because their labor was needed as a backbone and crucial source of profit for the cotton plantations and the overall economy in the South and the country as a whole. Today, with great numbers of black people concentrated in the inner cities, and with many factories and other capitalist enterprises having moved away from the urban cores, the police have killed thousands of black people in the last few decades, and they play a key part in forcibly maintaining masses of black people in a situation where, especially youth, robbed of any decent future under this system, are killing each other in the thousands, and millions are either incarcerated or in some other way under the control of the so-called justice system. Because white supremacy is such a defining part of this country, it is not just African Americans and Native Americans, but people of color generally who are subjected to discrimination, degradation, and brutality. And this applies now in acute ways to those whose roots lie in Mexico, El Salvador, and other parts of Central America and the Caribbean, which are tightly ensnared in a net of domination and exploitation by the imperialists of the USA, whose ravaging of these countries has driven many to emigrate to the US itself. White supremacy and capitalism, they have been completely interwoven and tightly stitched together through the whole development of this country down to today. To attempt to really put an end to white supremacy while maintaining the system of capitalism would tear the entire fabric of the country apart. White supremacy and capitalism. It is not possible to overcome and finally abolish the one without overthrowing and finally abolishing the other.
That was Bob Avakian on the oppression of black people and other people of color, taken from the speech, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution. Now we'll hear Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us and co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show, with a segment she did for that show on the murder of George Floyd and the beautiful uprising.
It has been 1 year since police murdered George Floyd, a year that has witnessed what we called at the time a beautiful rising. And it was. Nearly every voice in society has given their take on this. Joe Biden paid lip service to the victims of police murder while appealing once again to Republicans for unity and, quote, healing the soul of America. Corporations tweeted stuff. Meanwhile, artists and thinkers are agonizing over the continued carnage by police of Black people and other people of color and the ongoing and relentless white supremacy that assaults Black people, immigrants, and others in every realm of their lives. Journalists and critics are pointing to the limitations of reforms without knowing exactly where to go or how to get there. People who took part in this beautiful rising are asking, where did the movement go? And don't know how to go forward to stand up for the very principles for which they braved tear gas and clubs and worse. And those at the very bottom of society, those who bear the brunt of police murder and terror the most, are experiencing and constantly telling us, RevComs, over and over again, they are hunting us. They are hunting our children. What are we supposed to do? Big questions are posed. But the real lessons of this beautiful rising sparked by the murder of George Floyd are being hidden, distorted, and lied about. The people need to understand what they accomplished. No, murder by police has not ended, and this is a painful reality that we all need to confront. But this doesn't mean these protests didn't do any good. And it doesn't mean it's time to get more practical and settle for working for some petty reforms. And it certainly doesn't mean that nothing can be done to end all this. No, the real lesson to draw from the murder of George Floyd and from the more than 400 years since the first Africans were dragged to these shores in slave chains is captured powerfully by Bob Avakian in his speech, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution.
White supremacy and capitalism. They have been completely interwoven and tightly stitched together through the whole development of this country down to today. To attempt to really put an end to white supremacy while maintaining the system of capitalism would tear the entire fabric of the country apart. White supremacy and capitalism. It is not possible to overcome and finally abolish the one without overthrowing and finally abolishing the other.
Abolishing this system means revolution, the overthrow of this system. And what these protests and this beautiful rising revealed was precisely the potential for this revolution. This is spoken to in a declaration, a call to get organized now for a real revolution that was recently issued by the RevComs. After speaking about the potential revealed in the outpourings around the climate crisis, the outpourings of fury of women against their abuse and degradation, this declaration and call says the following about this rising. Last summer, when millions of us, of all races and genders, rose up all over this country in righteous rebellion in response to the vicious murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor by police, this powerfully demonstrated the potential for revolution. We were supported and joined by millions more and countries all around the world. And at the height of this, the whole country, the whole world was compelled to recognize and talk about the long and continuing chain of these racist murders and big questions about the whole history and nature of this country. Yes, this powerful rising was, in the short run, misled into dead ends by people working for meaningless, petty reforms and seeking funds for themselves and positions within the structures of this system. But that does not change the fact that what was demonstrated was the possibility and potential for something much greater and far better, an actual revolution. It's important to look at how this is so and how much it matters. And how all this didn't just spring forth like magic, but was brought forward through a process of struggle. Struggle that needs to be built on and continued to take it forward. It mattered. that the masses of people in Minneapolis broke with protest as usual and lit up the sky that first night in defiance, shocking those in power and sending a message to the people that we are not taking this. And through this, igniting a simmering rage all across this country. It mattered that as these protests spread, they reached into the heartland of America, including rural and southern towns that had been hotbeds of the KKK, so-called Trump country. This showed how when the people stand up with right on their side, this can shake even the strongholds of reaction, giving strength to those who had been intimidated into silence, and even breaking loose some who had been locked into oblivious ignorance. It mattered that the RevComs were out in the midst of all of this, joining in the uprising and also struggling over the way forward, sounding the alarm on the fascism of the Trump-Pence regime, pointing to the need and the potential for an actual revolution, and bringing forward the leadership we have for this revolution in Bob Avakian, and more.
When that pig put his knee on George Floyd's neck, that concentrated 400 years of a system that has had its boot on the necks of black people. But you all standing up here brought something else into the picture, the possibility that that boot could be lifted. And this is important.
This movement has already put Trump in a f***ing bunker. Let's drive him out the White House. And from there, come on to make revolution and get to a society where black people, brown people, people all over the world, people of different sexual orientations can actually live a life worthy of human beings.
There is a leader, I'm telling you, sisters and brothers, you have not heard about him because they don't want you to know about him, but he came out of the 60s. He gave his heart to the people. He never gave up on revolution, and he went to work developing a strategy so we can bring this system down. He wrote a constitution for a new socialist republic in North America with a new economy, new culture, new laws, new education. This is Bob Avakian, and you need to find out about him if you want this to end.
It mattered that as the rulers and other reactionaries pit black and brown people against each other, in some places leading to ugly violence among the people, that the RevCom stepped into this and led in forging unity, including a march of hundreds here in Los Angeles for black and brown unity.
It could have been anybody else taken from their land, used for the foundation of this country, but it was black people that were taken.
People from Central America, people from Mexico, that come to this country to try to bring a better life to their family. And they're told that black people are lazy. They're told that black people are criminals. And if you're black, you're told that those people that are coming from across the border are taking your jobs. And that serves their f***ing system to keep us in the situation that we're in instead of coming together and recognizing who our true enemy is. Not the people across the street from us, not the people that look like me and you, but the system.
It's about uniting black and brown from the hood, from the neighborhood, Crips, Bloods, essays.
All of us united, fighting against the power, you know?
And that immigrants locked in this country's torturous detention centers went on hunger strike to show their solidarity with the struggle for black lives.
We are speaking from the Mesa Verde detention facility in Bakersfield, California. We are speaking out against the disregard of human lives. We are speaking out against the racist criminal injustice system.
We want the police to stop murdering black people.
They were trying to the people.
It mattered that statues paying tribute to slavery came down. And as each fell, it was like a scab being peeled off an oozing infection, with more and more people seeing just how deep the white supremacy goes to the core and foundation and ongoing functioning of this country. It mattered The people lost their fear.
Fine, come out, shoot me. I'm f***ing white. I've never had to worry about that in my life. Black people have been afraid for so long.
That when the police, the National Guard came at them with rubber bullets and tear gas and more, that the people came back stronger, with such courage and defiance that they drove that bloated bag of fascist feces, Donald Trump, to borrow a phrase from Bob Avakian, into a goddamn bunker.
Guess who's hiding in the basement? It's that coward, the bunker boy.
And it mattered that when Donald Trump called out the U.S. military to stage a fascist photo op, that the people came back once again with such defiance that they drove a wedge between Mark Milley, the top military commander in the country, and Donald Trump, the commander-in-chief, propelling Milley to apologize before the eyes of the world.
I should not have been there.
In part, this revealed the fear of Milley and others that their military could lose legitimacy in the eyes of the people, including among huge numbers of the black and brown members who make up its ranks. Reports have been coming out that many black National Guardsmen were ashamed to tell their families that they were part of patrolling these protests. All this has potentially profound implications for the future revolutionary situation we are fighting to bring into being. It mattered that as the fascist forces began to regain their footing and started attacking and threatening, ramming their cars into protests, even outright gunning down protesters in the streets of Kenosha, Wisconsin, that 21 brave heroes who should never be forgotten did lay down their lives, setting a powerful moral example and demonstrating vividly the kind of unity and sacrifice that will be necessary to withstand this system's repression as we go forward to put an end to this system itself that spawned all of this nightmare. And it mattered that this beautiful rising inspired people all over the world to stand up as well. In Britain, Brazil, Iran, Syria, France, India, Senegal, Mexico, Japan, and everywhere in between. Even the strength of the recent resistance among Palestinians against the genocidal assault by Israel cannot be separated from the inspiration of this beautiful rising and its impact on the world. All this gives just a taste of how much it will inspire people all over the world as we make advances for an actual revolution in this country and finally win a revolution in this most monstrous imperialist beast that has ever existed. No, this didn't sustain at the same high level, and people don't know without good leadership where it needs to go now. But the point is, all these people are still out there, and we do have the leadership we need to go further than a beautiful rising to a beautiful world. That leadership is Bob Avakian, someone who's developed the scientific approach, the strategy to make revolution, the vision of a new society, and who is actively leading us and navigating to get there now. And it is this potential for revolution that Bob Avakian recognized in this beautiful rising, and he spoke to it right in the height of it on June 1st of last year in a statement that ended like this.
We do not need to live in this world where so much of humanity suffers so unnecessarily under this system of capitalism imperialism that cannot exist without exploiting and degrading people, suffocating their humanity, and killing them without mercy. We can do much better. Don't listen to talk about how it can never happen. Look around you. What seemed impossible yesterday is happening right now. Revolution. Why should we settle for anything less?
Yes, the fascists lashed out with fury against this challenge to white supremacy and unleashed threats and violence against the people, and all this culminated in a violent fascist coup attempt in the Capitol on January 6th. But even this very negative development holds a potential positive within it. It has revealed and brought to the fore the irreconcilable differences that are tearing society apart, contributing to the very rare time and circumstance that we find ourselves in when the possibility for a real revolution could be ripened. So on this anniversary of the brutal police murder of George Floyd, and the beautiful rising this sparked. We need to recognize and stand on all the strengths of the people and all the potential that was revealed in this for an actual revolution. And we need to go to work with the leadership we have in Bob Avakian and the strategy and direction that is laid out in this declaration to transform this potential into a force that is hastening and preparing to bring this system down.
That was Sansara Taylor on the murder of George Floyd and the beautiful uprising. We're going right to the next part, which is a short documentary from the American Crime series on RevCom.us on the Tulsa massacre.
Okay, here's a pop quiz. What was the site of the biggest race riot in the history of this country?
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
That's right, the great state of Oklahoma, home of lovable farmers and ranchers who just need to learn how to be friends and share all those wide open spaces. In the decades following the Civil War, Oklahoma was the destination for both white settlers and former slaves looking to build a new life. Was also the final destination of the Trail of Tears, the forced march of the southeastern Native American tribes, but that's another American crime story. When Oklahoma became a state in 1907, the very first law they passed legalized and enforced racial segregation. After all, they had to make it a real American state. Tulsa, then, was a sleepy town of 10,000. But with the discovery of oil 3 years later, the population grew to over 100,000 in just one decade. Among those were thousands of black people looking for a better life and hoping to escape the worst of Jim Crow Mississippi, Georgia, and other states of the Old South. In 1921, Tulsa was strictly segregated. Black people could work in town, but all black residents were required to live and shop in the Greenwood District of northern Tulsa. Greenwood's segregated economy, self-contained and self-sufficient, was so successful that it became known nationally as the Black Wall Street. Black-owned grocery stores, banks, libraries, hotels, restaurants, movie theaters, and more lined Greenwood Avenue. But here's what happened on May 30th, 1921. Dick Rowland, a 19-year-old black shoe shiner working downtown, enters the elevator of the only building with a restroom that blacks can use in the area. Sarah Page, a white 17-year-old, is the elevator operator. When the door closes, Page cries out, and Rowland, who may have just tripped and stepped on her foot, runs off, knowing what can happen. Sure enough, he's alleged, without evidence, to have assaulted Page. He's arrested the next morning and held in a jail cell above City Hall. Then the headlines hit. The Tulsa Tribune declares "Nab Negro for attacking girl in elevator." And headlines an editorial, quote, "To lynch Negro tonight," end quote. Within an hour, a lynch mob in the hundreds descends on the courthouse. Word spreads throughout Greenwood that whites are storming the courthouse, and Rowland is in danger. At 9 p.m., a group of 25 armed black men, some World War I veterans, drive to the courthouse determined to stop the lynching. The local authorities refuse their offer to help, and they leave. But the heavily armed white mob is incensed. When a group of 75 black men return to the courthouse and are again turned away, a white man approaches an armed black army veteran and demands he turn over his gun. A fight breaks out, and a gun goes off. Historian and author Scott Ellsworth wrote, "While the first shot fired at the courthouse may have been unintentional, those that followed were not. Almost immediately, members of the white mob and possibly some law enforcement officers opened fire on the African-American men who returned volleys of their own. The initial gunplay lasted only a few seconds, but when it was over, as many as a dozen men, both black and white, lay dead or wounded. Outnumbered more than 20 to 1, the black men began a retreating fight toward the African-American district with armed whites in close pursuit. They tried to kill all the black folks they could see," a survivor, George Monroe, recalled later. "As many as 500 white men and boys are immediately sworn in as, quote, special deputies, end quote, and told to, quote, get a gun and get a nigger, end quote. Deputies pass out weapons from a sporting goods store across the street. White rioters begin firing on blacks and setting fire to black-owned homes and businesses late into the night. Then as dawn approaches, literally thousands of armed whites, some estimated as many as 10,000, gathered in three locations on the edges of Greenwood. A siren sounds at daybreak, and the mobs of white terrorists launch their invasion. These armed white mobs include over 150 Tulsa police. They set about systematically killing, looting, and burning the entire district of Greenwood, block by block. Armed whites break into black homes and businesses and force the people outside, where they are led away at gunpoint to internment centers set up by the authorities. Anyone who resists is shot. If guns are found inside, the occupant is shot. Homes and businesses are looted, then set on fire with torches and oil-soaked rags. House by house, block by block, Greenwood is demolished. Even airplanes are used to shoot black people from the air and drop kerosene bombs on buildings, setting them ablaze. Tremendously outnumbered, black Tulsans fight back. Riflemen take positions atop the belfry of a newly built church to try and halt the white invasion, but the church is burned to the ground. Deputized police and the National Guard units arrest 6,000 Greenwood residents. Black Tulsans don't go down without a fight, but they're outgunned and outnumbered. Survivors recounted black bodies loaded on trains and dumped off bridges into the Arkansas River, and, most frequently, tossed into mass graves. By noon on June 1st, these white mobs had murdered more than 300 black Tulsa residents. They had turned 40 square blocks of Greenwood into a scorched wasteland, including 1,256 homes destroyed, along with virtually every other structure, churches, schools, businesses, even a hospital and library. More than 10,000 residents were left homeless. Thousands of black Tulsans spent the winter living in tents, many left for good, having had enough of Tulsa, Oklahoma. A grand jury investigation organized by Oklahoma's governor in the days after the massacre referred to the events in Tulsa as a, quote, Negro uprising, end quote, concluding, quote, the assembly was quiet until the arrival of armed Negroes, which precipitated and was the direct cause of the entire affair, end quote. But that ain't all, folks. The Tulsa race riot was erased from the state and country's history for 76 years. It wasn't until 1997 that a commission was established in Oklahoma to study the riot. And what did they find? Quote, not one of these criminal acts was then or ever has been prosecuted or punished by government at any level, municipal, county, state, or federal.
On June 1st, Carl Dix, a founding member of the Revolutionary Communist Party, spoke at Revolution Books in New York City on the Tulsa Massacre. His talk was full of deep understanding, and you should really watch the whole thing on Revolution Books NYC on YouTube. Unfortunately, we don't have time for the whole talk, but I wanted to play the beginning of his introduction, so here's Carl Dix.
I will never forget the violence of the white mob when we left our home. I still see black men being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams, she said. I have lived through the massacre every day. Our country may forget this history, but I cannot. This is a quote from Viola Fletcher. Sister is 107 years old, a survivor of the Tulsa race massacre, and this quote is from the testimony that she gave before Congress this past May. And let me just start here. This history must not be forgotten. Everyone with a heart for humanity, everyone who is, as the declaration and call from the RevCom says, can't stand the world the way it is, and who are sick and tired of seeing so many people being treated as less than human, cannot forget this history and cannot allow it to be wiped away. I want to begin my remarks tonight by reading the following short statement from Bob Avakian, the leader of the Movement for an Actual Revolution, on the Tulsa Massacre. The Racist Tulsa Massacre, The Most Profound Lesson, by Bob Avakian. This year is the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre in 1921, in which armed mobs of racist white people, including many police in Tulsa, Oklahoma, slaughtered hundreds of black people, terrorized thousands, and burned down a thriving black community with its churches, hospitals, homes, schools, libraries, and businesses. And this kind of murderous oppression is still going on in many horrific ways under the rule of this system in this country and worldwide. Case closed. This system from the start and right down to today is guilty of the most atrocious crimes against humanity. It will never stop doing this. It can never stop, so long as it is in power and in effect. That is a lesson we must firmly grasp and act on. The question is not whether this system of capitalism, imperialism needs to go, but how soon can it be swept away by the revolutionary struggle of millions of people who are sickened and outraged by the reality that things like the Tulsa Massacre are not some kind of exception, but the rule. A concentration of what this system is all about and how it treats masses of people, not only in this country, but all over the world. Bob Avakian, as I said, is the leader of the Movement for an Actual Revolution. Raymond referred to him. He's the architect of the new communism, a new framework for human emancipation, a leader who has figured out how to make revolution in a country like this. I'm going to talk more about that later. I just wanted to let you know who he is and that I'm a follower of his. I'm a follower of his because I want to get free. You saw the short film. You saw breaking down how people were slaughtered, how people, thousands, were marched into internment camps, how 40 square blocks of a thriving black community was destroyed. You also saw the headline, "Nab Negro for Assault of White Woman." There was another headline which was mentioned but not put up on the screen in the newspaper, "To Lynch Negro Tonight." This wasn't some spontaneous thing. This was something that the authorities in Tulsa put the call out for. And then they followed that up by not prosecuting any of the people who carried out this slaughter, this destruction, this mass theft. Because this was an attack that had genocidal, you know, dimensions. And if you doubt that or want to get clearer on that, we can talk about that in the discussion. Nobody was ever prosecuted. No restitution was ever brought forward. And the survivors of this massacre, their descendants and supporters, have been calling for punishment for the perpetrators of this. They've demanded restitution and restoration, and they were denied at every step along the way. Insurance companies refused to honor any of the policies that any of the businesses had with them. They just said, "We ain't paying it, forget it." And they did erase this from history. People who grew up in Tulsa have told me that they learned about this massacre after they left Tulsa, went away to college. That's when they found out what had happened in the city that they grew up in. They were so intent on erasing the history of this that when they microfilmed the newspaper, you know, because that's a thing that they started doing to preserve the historical record, they put them on microfilm and then you can find them in the library and all like that. They took the front page that said Negro nabbed in arrest for the assault on a white woman and to lynch Negro tonight. Those pages were missing. They're not on the microfilm. That's how intent they were on erasing this. Now, the Tulsa massacre is horrific. It was the largest massacre of black people in this country, the largest racial massacre in this country. But it is not an extreme, isolated example of the oppression that this system has inflicted on black people. It's not an isolated case. Instead, it's part of a long, unending chain of savagery this country has inflicted on the African-American people. And let's walk through that. If you say, Carl, why are you hyping it up? I ain't hyping nothing up. If anything, I'm understating it. And let's talk about this reality. And then you tell me that I'm overstating it, that I'm talking about stuff that didn't really happen. Look at World War I when this happened. There were, after World War I when this happened. There were waves of attacks like this. In 1919, over three dozen areas across the country, there were mob attacks on black people by white mobs, ranging from major cities like Chicago, even down to rural areas in Arkansas. Black people were murdered. Black people had their property taken, destroyed. People were put in concentration camps. What was the reason for this? It was things like black sharecroppers in a place in Arkansas hired a white lawyer to represent them in their negotiations with the land, the plantation owners, because they knew they were getting robbed. And they think, we get a white lawyer up in here, maybe we'll actually get what we are owed for the cotton that we're producing. That was deemed an act of insurrection. That's how they were looking at this stuff. Now, at 1919, the shit was so widespread and so foul that the leaders of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People dubbed that period the Red Summer of 1919.
That was Carl Dix on the Tulsa Massacre. You can find the link to the whole talk on my social media or just search Carl Dix on Revolution Books NYC on YouTube. We're going to go out now with a little bit of Racist Sexist Boy from the Linda Lindas. Talk to you again next week.
A little while before we went into lockdown, a boy in my class came up to me and said that his dad told him to stay away from Chinese people. After I told him that I was Chinese, he backed away from me. Eloise and I wrote the song based on that experience.
So this is about him and all the other racist, sexist boys in this world.